You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
We're very privileged to have on our show the author of All My Bones Shake. Dr. Reverend Jensen is a professor. He teaches law, media, ethics, and politics at the University of Texas at Austin. His books include Get Enough, The Heart of Whiteness, Citizens of Empire, and Writing Dissent. He is also the author of All My Bones Shake, which is his latest book. We're very privileged. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Sylvia.
Now, when we think about Christmas, there is this sense of nostalgia that I think overcomes many people who celebrate Christmas. And coming from Latin America, there's this sense of renewal, a promise, you know, something great. However, living in Canada, it seems there's also something else that takes over. What is it about Christmas that inspires this sense of almost a chance to start over?
Well, you know, like any religious holiday or symbol, Christmas can and does mean many things, not only different things to different people, but many things to one person. I think it's important here to separate Christmas as a theological moment, a spiritual moment, and Christmas as a cultural phenomenon. I think the critique of Christmas as a cultural phenomenon is well known. We live in a consumer society, and Christmas has been colonized by the dominant culture as simply one more marketing opportunity. That, I think, is an important realization, but it's one that's been discussed many, many times. I think it's more interesting to go, as you're doing, to what Christmas might mean in a deeper sense, positively and negatively. I think in the positive, one of the things that I always take away from Christmas is the thrust of the story is about how that spirit which will save the world is not going to come from on high. It comes from the most lowly place, from a manger, from peasant people who are cast out in a sense. That's an important lesson to learn in a culture that glorifies wealth and power. So ask yourself in the United States, Canada, the developed world today, who are the heroes? Well, the heroes tend to be politicians with great power, business people with great wealth, or celebrities who have some claim to fame. That's a sad recognition that the culture has, in a sense, turned its back on the meaning of the story, which is that greatness and the power that truly can change the world doesn't come from those kind of people. It comes from the most ordinary, the most common of us.
So talking about the significance of Christmas from a theological sense, for someone like myself who grew up in a highly Catholic society, Christmas had a very different meaning. But I wonder if you could talk from this perspective, the connection to Christmas and what it means to be Christian.
Well, again, there's not one answer to that. If you ask people what does it mean to be a Christian in the contemporary world, you'll get many different answers. Some of them very exclusivist, that is, answers that want to create Christianity as the only site for wisdom, insight, salvation, etc. That's clearly not my perspective on the faith tradition. So let's go back and recognize that Christmas is simply one way that people throughout history have celebrated the winter solstice. I mean, obviously, nobody knows what day Jesus Christ was born. If one believed there was a historical Jesus, that is, an actual person, a teacher, a political revolutionary, whatever one thinks of him, nobody knows when he was born, so why pick that particular day in December? Well, it has something to do with the winter solstice, the pagan tradition, the way in which Christianity, like many new faiths, tried to look at the cultural symbols and practices and rituals that already existed and attach themselves to it. So for me, the Christmas story at its core is also a reminder that Christianity is simply one attempt to make sense of a complex world, and that it's connected to the traditions of previous faiths and mythologies. And connected to paganism. I think that's a good corrective on the tendency for Christians, at least in the contemporary United States, to try to make exclusive claims. This is just one more winter celebration. Now, to say that isn't to undermine or trivialize Christmas. It's to recognize where it fits in the world.
One of the important, I guess, connections that I make, whether you're a Christian or whether you're a Muslim, with any kind of religious, I would say spiritual, because I think there is a difference between being religious and being spiritual. There's a set of values that comes along with that identity. And with being a Christian, there is a set of values that Christ had intended. So can we talk a little bit about how these values are seen to be in contrast to our actions in a society built on consumption, where identity is dependent on consumption and our ability to consume?
Well, this is another case where one can take the complex text and tradition on which Christianity is based and come to different conclusions. For instance, many of us look at that text and tradition and suggest that if one is going to apply it to modern economics, that is, if one is going to try and learn something from the wisdom of that tradition that's useful as we try and understand how to live within a modern economy, that the arguments of the text and the tradition are about compassion, about sharing, not just about charity to the poor, but about actually trying to create a world in which there is real equality. Well, that's one way to look at the tradition. Well, a lot of contemporary Christians who are politically more conservative will argue that the Bible, the Christian tradition and text, is an argument for capitalism. I just recently watched a DVD put out by a right-wing Christian ministry in Florida in the United States, arguing that socialism is, you know, satanic, that it's anti-biblical. And they take what I think is a pretty plain meaning of the text and turn it on its head. Well, which is the correct interpretation? Well, you know, this is what interpretation is, argument over meaning. So there is no one understanding of the text, but I think the overwhelming weight of the Christian tradition, and not only the New Testament, the Christian Bible, but also the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, I think is an argument about trying to remedy inequality. Inequality may be part of the modern human predicament, but the tradition is about how do you overcome it. So Jubilee, the practice, for instance, of eliminating debts on a regular basis to equalize and make sure that wealth doesn't become too concentrated, well, that's a biblical principle that strikes me as an awareness of the threat that concentrated wealth brings to an otherwise perhaps decent society. The passages in the book of Acts that talk about early Christian communities after the death of Jesus that were based on essentially socialist principles. I mean, obviously socialism as a ideology didn't exist back then, but the notion of living in common, the notion that there's really no private property in a faith community, there's simply that which people of faith share. Well, that's right there in the New Testament. And I think that if we look around at where our society's gone and look to the wisdom of our oldest stories, it's an uncomfortable exercise because we realize that we live in a society that's not only at odds with Christian values or Christian faith or Christian tradition. You know, I think we live in a society that's at odds with the values of all of the world's traditions, whether they're secular or theological, that in fact we live in a society that's morally indefensible. Now, the reason this is a minority view in the world today, of course, is because to take that seriously is not only to spark an interesting conversation, it's to suggest one should commit oneself to a social and political practice that's quite difficult in the modern world because of how the conventional society operates.
I was going to ask you, is capitalism Christian? You've already answered, but...
Well, you know, but I also think that I hesitate. I would never say that capitalism is un-Christian. The reason I wouldn't say that is because I think, you know, anybody who, you know, declares that he or she has the definitive interpretation of such a complex text and tradition is really overstepping one's authority. I mean, I think that a reading of the Christian tradition and the reading of the Bible done in good faith and done with an attempt to step outside of contemporary society and do it to the degree one can sort of honestly, I think the best reading of it is consistent with, as I said, other traditions, which suggests that, in fact, we've got to find different ways to organize ourselves, especially economically. But I don't pretend that's definitive. In fact, I don't even think one is aiming for a definitive reading. One is aiming for a discussion, a conversation. The heart of democracy, we should remember, is really in dialogue, in conversation. One makes progress in that sense when one opens up that space. So unfortunately, in the United States today, it's very hard to have those dialogues. But I think that's one of the reasons that religion is still so important, because it's a place where we should be able to create those dialogues.
Absolutely. I was in at a conference in Argentina recently, and there were people from all kinds of communities doing community radio. And the women in Bolivia and very rural areas came out, and while I was interviewing, she said, you know, the one thing we must remember is that no one person has the entire truth or knowledge. We all, she says, have, you know, our own cultural knowledge that's grounded contextually where we are. And when we come together, that's when we get a glimpse of totality, in a sense, right? When we allow that richness of diversity. But talking about, you know, the way in which our views and perhaps our own contributions to create a society that is more inclusive, whether it be through Christianity, whether it be through Buddhism, whether it be to different traditions that are culturally centered. How do we create those alternatives? Because I think there's a very different approach when we set up a society that's based on charity to a society that's created around reciprocity and collaboration.
Yeah, well, I think we do it by recognizing that if we're going to attempt it, it's going to be in resistance to the dominant culture. And because of that, it means that we're going to have to do it in small, local ways that are essentially experiments that are trying to run against the current. For instance, here in Austin, I work with a group that tries to help people who want to start worker-run, worker-owned businesses, what we would call worker cooperatives. I think that's a great idea. It's an experiment on how to create an alternative within contemporary capitalism. Contemporary capitalism defines the world's economy. There are very few parts of the world outside of it. And so those of us who live in that system have to experiment within it. And I think worker co-ops are a great way to do that. They embody the values of cooperation, of an attempt to create a living wage for people in connection to other groups and businesses in the community, with an eye toward the effect of all of this on the living world outside of the human family. It's a perfectly, I think, sensible way to go about experimenting. Other people have experimented with what are called intentional communities, where people come together and sort of pool their resources and create a community, you know, in the days of hippies, they were called communes. You know, they can be organized around spiritual connections or around secular political connections, all sorts of things. Well, those are all ways of experimenting, and I think they're very useful. Now, some people will say, "Well, I don't within my own life, I don't want to go that far." Well, there's ways to even take smaller steps. For instance, as we speak in Austin, where I live, it's Saturday morning, which means it's Farmers Market Day. So simply the act of going to a farmer's market, buying food directly from producers who are close to you, who live somewhere in the region, and doing that outside of a corporate supermarket, doing it in an open-air space where there are musicians and all sorts of other cultural events going on around you, a place that allows you to meet and greet others, that's an act of resistance as well. I think one of the most interesting a little statistics I've ever heard is a comparison of the amount of time people spend when they're shopping at a farmer's market versus shopping in a supermarket. And what the evidence tells us, which is not hard to understand, is people go into supermarkets, they shop very quickly, and they don't talk to other people. Whereas at a farmer's market, people take a long time to shop, and they talk to lots of other people. Well, what kind of world do you want to live in? A place where your daily routine is defined by anonymous connections to people you'll never know, done as speedily as possible, or kinds of connections that enrich you by conversation connection, where you linger because you want to, not in a rush to get out of a bad experience.
That's beautiful. In your book, you talk precisely about this issue of power over a dead world, and I think that exemplifies some of the ways. You also make the connections to how one can guide their way of life by reading theology in a way that is constructive. There's one quote that I really like, and I wonder if you could maybe talk a little bit about the significance. You quote that this is a passage from the once heretical gospel of Thomas, and you say, Jesus said, "If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you."
The Gospel of Thomas is one of those Gospels that did not make it into the biblical canon. We talk about the canonical Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four that were eventually sort of approved by the powers that be as the official story. Well, there's lots of other Gospels. Some of them are called the Gnostic Gospels, which came from a particular sect that arose in Christianity. To me, they're all Gospels. They're all places you can look for wisdom, not because they tell you the definitive truth about something, but because they spark you to think. And that particular passage really struck me, that what it really is a statement of a belief that human beings are creatures, you know, in a living system that need not look to the heavens to understand, but need to look within. That we are creatures who evolved with a capacity to understand our place in the world. It doesn't mean, as you pointed out earlier, we understand everything about our world, but we're equipped to make sense of our lives. And that means that what we have within us, if we can tap into it and bring it out, it will save us. And if we ignore that, if we deny who we are as creatures in a larger living world, well, it will destroy us. And I think that's what we're seeing play out in contemporary society. We know what it means and what it takes to live in a just and sustainable way. One has to live in communities where one is accountable and responsible to others. Yet we live in a society, especially an economy, that creates exactly the opposite conditions, where we see ourselves as individuals accountable to no one else. Well, you know, I'm not that brilliant. I mean, I don't pretend to be a great scholar. I'm kind of a ordinary guy from a small town in North Dakota. And I can figure that one out. That's not too hard. And I'm often struck by how the wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding that we really do need isn't complex. It's very basic. And it's not so much about uncovering new knowledge. It's about returning to what we know. Not only what we know in our own lives, but we know from our collective history. We know what doesn't work. What doesn't work is hierarchy, power and domination. An understanding of power, as you pointed out, is power over, the ability to control other people. We know that that conception of power and the social structures that come out of it are a loser. They're bad for people and they're bad for the living world. We know that power with, a conception of power that looks at connections, at how we find our own power in connection with others, not through hierarchy and domination, but through cooperation. We know that traditionally that has produced just and sustainable structures. Well, I mean, I personally think that's pretty straightforward. Now, making that happen in the world, which is defined by power over and by domination and by hierarchy, that's complex. That's difficult. How we get to a place where equality, cooperation, and empathy are the defining, you know, traits of human beings. That's a tough one, especially when we look at the very desperate circumstances we face today. But the basic insights, I don't think, are that complicated.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Dr. Robert Jensen. His latest book, All My Bones Shake, Seeking a Progressive Path to the Prophetic Voice. Thank you again for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Sylvia. Thanks so much.
Take care. That was Dr. Robert Jensen. He is a professor at the University of Austin.
Robert Jensen mentioned in the previous interview that the simple act of going to a farmer's market is an act of resistance in a capitalist system. But a bigger act of resistance is what you're doing right now, and that's listening to independent community radio. The next interview is a short interview to finish the show with Nima Petrin. He's the VP of the Independent Community Radio Network in Nepal. And the interview was taken in La Plata, Argentina at the recent AMARC 10 conference.
We're very privileged to be speaking with Nima Taman Patrin. He is a VP of the Association of Community Broadcasters in Nepal, ACORAV, at the AMARC conference 10 in La Plata, Argentina. Welcome to our show, Nima, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
How was community radio started in Nepal?
Community radio in Nepal was started at the time that the government had the monopoly in information to the people. So the people wanted very much to speak their voices. So as a result, the community radio came up. But then it took 2 years to get the license from the government to establish the first community radio station in Nepal. So when the first community radio was established, then that has started to broadcast the people's voices. So people were very happy that they could give their voices over the community radio. So it was like, you know, before the radio was for them, it was very, very like, you know, out of reach. But as the community radio established, then they could come there, they could speak their voices, they could tell their interest and so on. So it was, it became very popular. So resulted that, you know, the government, we had the democracy in 1990, you know, new government. They were not that strict to give the license to the community radio. Resulted, we had many community radio established, and now the people has the race over the radio to tell their interests, to tell their voices. The community radio has been a very nice tool to bring the voices for voiceless.
Can you give us an example of how community radio has helped you inform, mobilize, and perhaps organize community in order to create transformative change in Nepal?
In Nepal, many people living in the countryside is a farmer, so they don't have any telephone reach, and so they were like, you know, very much out of the information. So the community radios are bringing the information through the news. The first thing they do is like, you know, to establish the informed community. So they have the news, like the local news, they have the national news, and they have international news. So the people in the countryside who hear radio, who listen radio, are very much informed. And another thing the community radio is doing is like empowerment of the local people, the grassroots level people. So this way, people are very informed and also empowered.
One of the issues we face globally today is the economic crisis. In Latin America, the crisis is described not as a crisis of economy, but as a crisis of imperialism and monopoly capitalism. How would you describe the issues being faced in Asia, and particularly in Nepal, as a result of the economic collapse and the ongoing trade agreements that are a kind of colonization of our lands, our resources, and our labor?
Nepal is, it's a pride of Nepal that Nepal never has been colonized directly, but then we have some issues that we are indirectly colonized from, you'd say, India. So many of our political issues are like, you know, depend on India. But then, when we link the community radio is like, you know, empower the local people. They are very much aware that nowadays what is happening. They know what is happening. So they're very updated with the political issues also.
How has community radio improved the living conditions of women and the women's movement in Nepal?
When we talk about the women movement in Nepal, community radio has been a biggest successful tool for them, because as the community radio is set up in the village, they can come to radio station, or the radio station reach to them to take their voices. So, you know, they can discuss a lot of their issues, a lot of their interest. So that way, they have the feeling that they can do it. They can speak on the radio. Oh, I'm on the radio. So that gives them the confidence. So they can do a lot of things. The first thing is the information that, you know. So when, like, you know, the community radio is giving information, they are the one who listen a lot while they're working in the home. For example, the allocation of budget for the particular VDC, we call it VDC, Village Development Committee, when the community radio inform the listeners how much budget is allocated for their VDC, then everybody knows that. So if they don't get that, they go to the VDC secretary and say, where is our budget? We want it. So in terms of, like, women movement, community radio has been doing a lot of good things for the women movement in Nepal.
What are some of the challenges community radios face in Nepal? And more importantly, what are some of the victories you celebrate today?
Okay, the challenges are, like, community radio is not supported from the government. That has to be actually support. We had to get the support from government. When I was talking the radio in Venezuela yesterday, the community radio has been very much supported from the government in Venezuela. But then they had some challenges also. The owner of the community radio is using the money for something else, some other enterprises. But in the Nepal context, we have like the radio, as I told earlier, that the first radio took 2 years to get the license. And our radio is still running on the same policy at that time when the government had the monopoly with the information, and also government was very much rigid to give the information to the people. So our challenge is that we need to have the policy change, and it has to be a community radio friendly policy from the government. And another challenge is, like, in the very, like, you know, kind of not a lack, but it's very, like, you know, not enough resource available in the countryside at the grassroots level. So those radio has to be supported from the government, or more supporter has to be seen there. But our victory is then the people in the countryside who has been living without information, they are very much informed, and that's the greatest thing. I would say our achievement, that they are informed, they are very much updated with the information, and then they can give their voices, they can tell their interests, their stories, and then that builds up their confidence a lot.
Fantastic. Thank you. How can people learn more about your work?
You can log on www.acorab.org.np, and we have the news there. We have, like, you know, everyday updated information there. And then there are several sites of the radio stations also that can be linked through Acorab site. And thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to tell a little bit about Nepal. So I feel very glad myself, and, you know, on behalf of the Nepalese people, I'd like to thank everybody, all the listeners, and also the radio station. Thank you.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Nima Taman Patrin. He is the VP of the Association of Community Broadcasters in Nepal, Acorab. For more information, you can go to acorab.org.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.